Hello, and welcome to Out in the Bay, our weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. I'm Marilyn Pittman. In the mid-80s, San Francisco's Mission District was home to the first gay comedy club. It was a space called the Valencia Rose, and it was the beginning of gay stand-up comedy. Now, up to that point, drag shows were the norm, but the city of San Francisco was exploding with comedy by people who were or would become household names. Robin Williams, Paula Poundstone, Bobcat Goldthwait, Ellen DeGeneres, Dana Carvey. Comedy clubs were in almost every neighborhood of the city, but nobody was openly gay on stage. You couldn't be. Yes, even in San Francisco. Yes, even in San Francisco. Club owners and bookers were afraid that would drive away customers. And maybe they were right. But that pivotal era would go on to make stars of many comics as long as they were straight or in the closet. So a small group of people who were gay and wanted to be funny about it started doing stand-up. Tom Amiano, Karen Ripley, Leah Delaria, Doug Holsklaw, Danny Williams, and my guest, who has since gone on to great acclaim in New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. Her ninth solo show, Not Getting Any Younger, is now running at The Marsh in San Francisco through October 23rd. Marga Gomez, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thanks, Marilyn. It's great to be on the show.
It's good to have you. You're a historical figure, and that's not just to me personally, which you are, but you really are. As you say in your current show at The Marsh, you talk about being a pioneer, which, of course, I love that word. And you talk about being a pioneer, which I think is what happens when we get older, as we look back and we go, wow, I started a bunch of stuff. And so you helped start gay comedy. It's very in its infancy, really. It wasn't really on the East Coast. It wasn't anywhere else in the early to mid-80s. And I'm just wondering if we can start with that, because I'd like you to just paint a picture for us of the Valencia Rose there on Valencia. And I'm almost down the street from the Marsh now. And what that time was like, the group of you that all got together and said, let's just do this. We can't get in the other clubs.
Well, it was gay comedy night was already, in effect, when I found it. I found flyers. I lived in the Castro area. And everything we knew was like on telephone poles. So I must have seen a flyer for gay comedy or gay comedy open mic. And I went, and it was run by Tom Amiano, our assemblyman, and a woman named Carol Roberts.
Oh, yeah, Carol Roberts.
Who was the food sexual. I think she was actually bisexual, and but she was actually the... she was the kingpin of everything. She ran a show at a place called Fanny's on 18th Street. So there were those two venues, but of course the Valencia Rose was the launching pad for a lot of the queer comics. And I had just I had moved from New York, and I came from a family where my dad was a comedian. So there were two influences, my father's profession, which I loved, always loved comedy, and then I was just crazy about women. So all I wanted to do was hang out around lesbians, and if I could find a way to do both those things together, it just seemed ideal. So when I saw these flyers, I went over to the Valencia Rose, and I can't remember if, I know it was Tom, but he always had a co-host. There was always a lesbian and a gay man. It was Tom, and it was either Carol Roberts or Leah Delaria who were the co-hosts at the time. So I went up on Mondays, and I did a set, which went great. I had been doing my first comedy sets at a place called The Other Cafe, which I just performed at their, like, 30th anniversary.
In Coal Valley.
Yes. And
at Coal and Carl.
And I was struggling, because when I started doing stand-up, I wasn't that great like I am now. I came out of theater, and I had no idea how to put a joke together, and so I kept doing just these little skits, these little one-person skits about fruit flies, and I don't know, they were insane, or Donna Summers, and wore costumes, and I finally started catching on, and by the time I went to the Valencia Rose, I figured out how to do jokes, and the great thing about it was that I could do material about being gay, which I didn't start off to do at the Other Cafe. because I didn't know how to approach it to a straight audience.
It wasn't done either. There was no precedent.
Yeah, no, there wasn't. Because I think even Kate Clinton hadn't started. I mean, she maybe just started right then.
But just for the women's audience, really. And she called herself a fumarist back then.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, feminist humorist. Adorable.
Love you, Kate, but that is kind of funny now.
There were two other lesbian comics that were actually doing this before any of us, and those were Maxine Feldman and Robin Tyler.
Maxine Feldman, who
passed away, I think, about 2 years ago. Really cool woman. And, yeah,
Robin Tyler's
yeah.
A woman unto her, yeah. A world unto herself.
Mm-hmm. Quite a force.
But she was in Newsweek or Time magazine with her partner, Patty Harrison, Harrison and Tyler, in 1971.
Right.
But they weren't out. They were a feminist humor. They weren't really out, even though they were partners.
Yeah, I think back then it was all about the nuanced double entendres and all that.
Feminist, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
So I got to the Once Your Rose, and it was amazing. There was an audience. There was a large audience for this already, and we were all just starting out. We weren't very polished, but it was a very forgiving audience. And then we were really, you know, we were really hitting the mark on a lot of the comedy and a lot of the things that were happening right then, unfortunately. The crisis for our community with AIDS and the homophobia that we were able to put into our comedy material and find a way to transform the rage into humor, which was, of course, a very effective tool.
Now, let me interrupt and just say, do you equate that with what black comics went through, what Richard Pryor or even Eddie Murphy, Chris Rock, any of the amazing black comics? And, you know, because they struggled to get into comedy clubs 20 years before we did, and even 10 years before we did. And I'm just wondering if you think
comics are still struggling to get, mm-hmm. you know, to get enough acceptance in comedy clubs. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's still all these barriers for anyone who's not a white male comic. You know, it's just the business.
White straight male comic, right.
Yes, right. We're all underrepresented voices, and women are underrepresented voices.
Well, they're not funny.
right.
I mean, that's one of the biggest things that people who run the clubs, who are mostly straight white men, have thought for years. It's like they finally accepted the blacks, and okay, and then finally, you know, people like Scott Capurro headlines at the Punchline here in San Francisco, and he's a flaming fag, and a good friend, so I can say that. Don't get all jumpy at me, and don't write letters.
Just call up Scott and ask him for a date.
Or he'll date you on stage and torture you. And so he got accepted, but that's because he was doing really edgy material like they like.
Yeah.
And making fun of himself mercilessly for being a fag. And, you know, and so it's always been different for women.
Well, also, I mean, people have... I guess they relate more to gay guys for a while it was lesbian comics who were starting to break through into the mainstream, and gay male comics, you know, except for the few that we knew, were in the closet more.
Mm-hmm.
Because they,
in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, because they had all this opportunity to make money, whereas the dyke comics is like, well, we're dykes, so we're not, you know, there's no way we can be girly girls on stage, so we're just going to keep doing that. In my show, I say, oh, I tried to pass for straight, but what's the use of lying if nobody believes you?
Which gets a big laugh. We're talking to Margaret Gomez here on Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. You got to check out her show through October 23rd at The Marsh in San Francisco. You can find out more at themarsh.org or margaretgomez.com. Now, in 1997, when Ellen DeGeneres finally, we all said in the gay community, well, finally, we all knew forever. Good Lord, came out, because she was from here, although she's from New Orleans originally. When she finally came out, it was so duh. But it made history. It changed everything. I mean, there's before Ellen, there's after Ellen. At least that's how I think about it. Do you think of it that way? And how did you feel about that?
Oh, B-E, yeah. I've used that.
B-E?
Yes, we say B-E before Ellen.
How did that affect you?
Well, I think we were all a bit frustrated because it was like, I guess the formula is get famous, then come out. I mean, as long as...
Wait, no, wait. Get famous, make sure you have several million dollars in the bank.
Yes.
Thank you, Rosie O'Donnell, as well, for waiting so much longer than Ellen, and you look more dykey. So, I mean, you know, I love to just say that because it's all true.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are comics about? But supposedly it's telling the truth. Supposedly it's about the truth. Well, if it's any good, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so there's different ways of being a stand-up. You can be an observational comic, and I mean,
like
that's
Ellen.
Sort of what Ellen did. So
and she never was personal like you and me, to talk about our girlfriends.
And I mean, she always dressed, you know, in her boy clothes, and I mean, she didn't overtly lie, but there was Margaret Smith, Ellen, Wanda Sykes, and all of them. It's really, you know, it's tough because, like I said, I didn't come out right away. I mean, you have to come out when you're ready. And I know quite a few other lesbians who are comics who, you know, they took a couple of years.
Or longer.
So,
yeah. So was that hard for you? I mean, as a pioneer.
I mean, I don't love that.
With that outfit you have on, that pioneer outfit. No,
my plaid shirt. That should be the gay flag.
That wagon wheel about the shirt. Rainbow. Yeah, with the wagon wheels on it. Yeah, the pioneer
shirt. Is that
what
it is? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you're wearing the same shirt, Marilyn.
It's radio. You can say anything. But it seems to me, as a pioneer, and I'm a pioneer in several years behind you, but there I was as well.
And your covered wagon going to Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, there you go.
White party.
That's part of your show as well. Very funny stuff.
Got to get that out.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess the question is, Marga, how do you deal with the possibility of having bitterness about any of that?
Well, you know, I was bitter for, pretty much like first of all, show business is a bitter occupation. I mean, my dad was bitter. My mom always said, you know, people are jealous. I mean, they gave me bitter tools to live by. And I've been bitter really my whole life. And I know, you know, people who are doing very well and they're always worried about the person behind them catching up. You're always trying to get ahead. You're never famous enough or rich enough. You know how I dealt with it? I got really sick a few years ago in 2006. I just had this horrible bout of vertigo for years and years. And you know when you're sick, show business isn't that important.
No.
You know, you just want to feel better.
Nothing is, yeah.
Yeah, I lost a lot of weight and I left New York. I had my first show off Broadway and I finished the run, but then it was like I had to take Valium to perform because I was...
Valium is the drug for vertigo,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my wife has vertigo.
Yeah, and I was like, just every show was kind of like crossing my fingers to get through it. I got through it. And then I was like super skinny. I looked ill. And, you know, when I saw women friends, they would say, oh my gosh, oh no, what's wrong? And then gay guys would go, you look fabulous. I'm maybe dying. So once I got better from that, and also I met someone and been in a relationship, and she said, oh, dark cloud, whenever I'd say anything, oh, look, what's that over your head?
She make fun of the dark cloud?
Yeah, so
that's good for you.
I got over myself, and you know, as far as career, it's like I don't have the opportunities, because you know, when I first came out as a gay comic, there was this circuit. I wasn't making a lot of money. There was 7 of us, you know, we all dated each other, and we had it made. The colleges had money, women producers in the lesbian comedy circuit had money.
Gay pride,
and now it's like,
everybody's, you know, a lesbian comic.
We paved the way, and now there's all these young, you know, queer comics who work for nothing. And sort of take all the gigs.
And young is in. I mean, that's what Hollywood wants.
Right,
that's what the business wants. So you want young so they can make that many more years of making money off of you.
Mm-hmm.
Old, not so good. Although, remember Phyllis Diller? She started here in San Francisco at age 41.
Right.
Rodney Dangerfield started also in his early 40s.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so
I don't think there's
impossible.
Any rules. Yeah.
Especially as a stand-up. You can do stand-up at any age. But in terms of the way the industry got consolidated and there's 5 media companies, what they're looking for is young talent that they can harvest for years and years and
years. Yeah, there's like one source of entertainment. Basically.
On the other hand, because of the internet, if you develop an audience, I mean, you don't have to be talented. If you've got an audience, you can make money.
Yeah.
And that's thankfully true now, that it doesn't matter about breaking into show business, because show business is YouTube.
It's about adapting. So you've got to do it. And obviously there's ways to, yeah, to be your own manager, your own agent, your own business person.
I'm talking to Marga Gomez, the artist, solo performer. Her show, Not Getting Any Younger, runs Thursdays through Sundays at the Marsh here in San Francisco through October 23rd. She's just had a few weeks of a run and is picking up steam. It already has steam, actually. And get a ticket before they sell out. I guess that's what I really want to say. You can go to themarsh.org, or you can also find out more about Marga at margagomez.com. I remember this. I'm going to go back to the past one quick moment, then we'll talk about your show. I remember a particularly killer bit you did. It was at this place at 8th and Folsom here in San Francisco in the 80s. There were no places for gay comics, out gay comics, to perform until 91. Really, a few gigs here and there at El Rio, a Wednesday night thing at El Rio. But for the most part, until 91 when Josie's Cabaret opened in the Castro. And so, but there was this place in the middle, late 80s called the Bay Brick Inn at 8th and Folsom. It's now the Cat Club, I believe. And it was Comedy in the Back Room. You were running it, and you did this hilarious thing that you, I guess, went ahead and did on the Comedy Tonight, the PBS show here, called, it was about the apartment. It was so hard to get an apartment, and I was thinking about this the other day, because I thought, well, you know, still, the rents are worse than ever, the situation in San Francisco, because nobody has any money to buy, nobody's loaning any money, and so the rents have gone up again, and it's always been impossible here. Do you remember that bit? It was a West Side Story bit?
It was a West Side Story parody, and I think I was also going back and forth to New York a lot, and I came up with it. Well, I had this character, Filomena Pinta. Now I'm remembering, and she was a. I made her be a Spanish television talk show host, and the show was called Mujer.
That's
and
right.
Say, I'm Filomena Pinta, and you're watching Mujer. Today
you
I'm Mujer.
Hair.
Mujer. Mujer. Virginity. What is it? Who has it? How can I get it? And I think I gave her this little West Side Story routine, and it takes place, I guess, in New York, and everybody's fighting for apartments. And then I guess this character meets Tony, and the last song is Somewhere, Somehow, Sublet.
And you also used the word apartment as a punchline, too.
For the apartment. They're fighting for apartments. Yeah.
It was very, it touched a nerve. I mean, it's a continual nerve here in San Francisco, but New York as well. I mean, obviously.
That was my love of the theatrics.
Well, I think
I had my music on a cassette tape.
Remember cassette tapes? All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what's so fun about, you know, you coming from theater, as I did as well, coming from theater into comedy. Of course, the first thing I did was doing sketch stuff and character stuff. And that's it works really well, because there are other people who I think of as sort of, I in my own head, I sort of think of them as stand-ups, you know, people who don't and can't do anything but stand-up, who aren't actors. And there's a whole, that's a kind of beautiful thing unto itself. But there's also something nice about having that acting ability and bringing some of those characters into it in terms of being entertaining.
I feel that comedy is so identified with that form of minimalist stand-up, which I admire, I love, and I try to do from time to time. It's one of my favorites. But comedy is wide-ranging, and it is sketch comedy, it is comedic theater. It's someone who's funny. I mean, I got that from my dad. He would do a little monologue, and then he would do a sketch. So that people just put reduce comedy to this one form when it's mm-hmm. really, it's like music. There's mm-hmm. classical music. There's rock.
I agree.
Yeah.
And your show, Marga Gomez, Pretty Witty and Gay, in 1993, during the height of the AIDS crisis, you performed it at Josie's and Around. And I'm just wondering, I thought that was pretty daring at the time to just put gay in the title. Did you wrestle with that, or was that an easy, had you just sort of fed up with all the difficulties of being out and not being able to be booked in this town? And you just said, here it is.
Oh, no. No, it was really a really good time. I think I started. I did Memory Tricks. That was my first solo show.
About your parents.
It was very G rated, and it had very little about me and my sexuality. And I was really getting so into the Valencia Rose and working with Donald Montwell, who really was the mentor for many of us.
The champion of
gay comedy, yeah. And so I wanted to do the second show about, back then it was... it was all about seeing lesbians on TV or gay guys on TV when they were on a talk show, like Sally Jesse Raphael or Phil Donahue.
Yes.
Tomorrow on Oprah, lesbians with long hair, gay men with ordinary apartments. And I had been asked to be on Geraldo, probably you two, we'd all been asked to be, and I didn't want to go on it. I felt that this was exploitive. And so I wrote a piece based on a woman, me, who was forced to go on a television talk show like Geraldo because it was lesbian jury duty. So we were forced. And so I did the show. I never had a problem with the title because it's from that song from West Side Story, which I actually want to say that I did that West Side Story routine at a Rita Moreno tribute. I actually did. She was there. And I unfortunately thought it was a roast. The woman who booked me, I think because she mostly spoke Spanish, she called it a roast. And so I showed up with all these Rita Moreno jokes, which she didn't really like. And she wasn't really into the West Side Story thing. But now we're friends. We were in the... I'm going to go see her tomorrow night, in fact.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's here during your show.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's talk about your show at the Marsh right now, Not Getting Any Younger. Something boomers can relate to. But I saw a lot of 30-somethings in your audience. It seems to relate. Everybody relates to. I'm doing a little bit of stand-up right now talking about my face aging.
I slam every age. And every age. So
you totally
starting
are
starting with babies.
You're very transparent. I mean, it's refreshing because you really are. I mean, I know the Jeff Hoyle's geezer was also sort of talking about, you know, being older. But yours is more stand-up in that sense of being a monologue talking about, you know, personal things, watching yourself age. And I've known you for a long time, and you look great. But I figure, well, if I'm this age, I know Mark is years younger than me.
Yeah.
So you must be getting older. So when I saw that you were doing this, I was like, okay, all right. Finally, Marga has gotten older. And so you're having a blast with it, right?
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's really a lot about my childhood, it turns out. And
what
when
is that? A show about aging is about your childhood.
Because I'm kind of a dyke Peter Pan. Incredibly immature. I'm really no different from the way I was. You know, I mean, my body, my vessel, my human vessel, of course, is deteriorating. I can feel things dropping off me, but inside, I've learned nothing. That's what my show is about. There's no wisdom to impart, and it's a feel good show for people who have gained no wisdom in their middle age and past that. I set out to be completely revelatory about myself and my age, and couldn't do it. That's not how I was raised. I was raised by a mother who said she was 21 her whole life, and a father who dyed his gray hair with black shoe polish. So you know, I'm from show
people. Business.
That's how we roll. Yeah.
You talk about growing up at a time when children were seen and not heard. How do you see child rearing nowadays? I mean, you see it differently, I assume. It is different.
Yeah, it's really frustrating because I feel that, you know, the timing of my life was, I mean, I had no voice. I was, the quieter, the better, the more inanimate I could be, the best. My mom would be very proud of me, you know, just for not, oh, you didn't move at all today. and you know, at a restaurant, you know, I mean, if we could go to a restaurant with our parents, we just had to, like, just zip it. We had to zip it and just... And now it's like I go to restaurants and I've been waiting. You know, as a kid, it's like, oh, boy, when I get to be an adult, things are going to be great and I'm going to be the boss. And now it's everything, like, just children are in your way. You have to let them pass. You have to listen to them go blah, blah, blah constantly. You know, you can't talk if a child is talking because you'll crush its expression. You'll traumatize it. You have to say that everything that it says makes sense.
There's a school in San Francisco where their motto is, and I talked to a 12-year-old boy of a friend of mine about this, and it turns out the motto is everybody's a winner. And, you know, we know that's not true. So what are we raising? A generation of people who won't know how to accept no for an answer, and then they'll get a gun. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's not going to be pretty.
I just really have been trying to be an adult, you know, for 30 years.
Hasn't worked out very well.
Trying to be an adult? No. I was in therapy. We went to a couples counseling for a couple of weeks. Worked fine. I said, everything's fine. Can I stop paying money now? But the therapist, she was great. But she said, you know, Marga, you obviously having trouble with your age, and you need to do a show about it. That's really how, and I know it's hard. We don't want to admit as solo performers that it's any kind of therapy at all.
We don't want that. We think it's art, right?
Yeah, or entertainment.
We're lucky if it's art or entertainment. Yeah.
But it was like, Every solo show I've done has been for a reason. I had to work something out. The show before this one was about how I'm, you know, my name is Gomez, but I can't speak Spanish. I can't dance salsa. So that was the shame of being a Latina who's, you know, a gringa. And now this one is just that, wow, I can't revel in it like everyone else that I know that's my age. I want to, but I, you know, I'm just blocked and I... And now I'm kind of just trying to accept my limitations.
Oh, just wait. You don't disclose your age? Would you disclose it here on the air?
That would make no sense.
Okay, fine. I just thought I'd ask, you know, just being a good journalist. Do you have a favorite moment on stage?
Marilyn, I love you.
You're welcome. Do you have a favorite moment on stage? You know how comics, I don't know that people understand this, but we have certain lines that we really like to say that we don't care if you laugh or not. We just like to say them, or certain facial expressions or moments we have in our own performance that we're like, oh, I love that moment. Do you have something like that on stage in this show?
Well, it's kind of a bad thing that happened. But when I think about it, I just keep laughing. It was at the Sunday matinee. And, you know, I do this, I portray this guy who was the chaperone of the my friend's party, my friend's birthday party, because we weren't allowed to have parties by ourselves when we were children. You know, you had to be married to have a party by yourself. So her dad was very aggressive. He had been kicked out of the Marines for being too aggressive. He had post-traumatic stress, PMS. And so I do this part where I'm freaking out, and I'm trying to blow a balloon for, you know, a balloon animal. And he's blowing up a balloon helicopter, and then he lets go of it, and Sunday, the balloon just flew forward into this woman's face in the front row, and it kind of smacked her. I heard the rubber smack her in the face, and she looked like, this is, you know, should I sue her? It's like,
this is not what I came for.
Yeah, and
I can't believe I paid my ticket.
But then she, like, stopped, like a baby when a baby falls and you think it's going to cry. It stops to think, should I cry? But then she laughed and was like, ha-ha, ha-ha, everybody. That's been my favorite moment so far.
Well, that's really mean. I think that's really funny. It says a lot about you, Marga. That's your favorite moment, the part where the lady got hit with the balloon in the face. It all goes back to slapstick at some point,
it won't
right?
happen. Well, the sound of the balloon, the rubber on her cheek, was just perfect. It landed perfect.
Well, I wish you the best in the continual run of this through October 23rd at the Marsh in San Francisco. It's fun to see you on stage again. It's always good to see you. You're one of my favorite pioneers.
Thanks,
and
hon.
You're still younger than me. Just look at it that way.
Who knows?
I'm telling you. You are. Oh, really, Blanche? Thanks a lot, Margaret, for being here.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Good luck, dear.
Thank you.
All right, you have been listening to Out in the Bay. Go to MargaGomez.com or to themarsh.org and find out more about her show, Not Getting Any Younger. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, as I said, a weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. Our show streams and is on the air every Thursday at 7 p.m. And we archive it at outinthebay.com for podcasting. And you can also put it on your phone by going to the Stitcher app on our website. We've been on the air for 7 years. We'd like your support. Go to our outinthebay.com website and hit the Donate Now button. Keep us on the air. Thanks to WY Enterprises for our website to help you manage your life and your office, wyenterprises.com. Write us with your comments or questions. Marilyn at Out in the Bay. Eric Jansen's is Eric at outinthebay.com. Thanks to the staff and management. Alan Farley is our engineer here at KLW. Out in the Bay is produced by Eric Jansen and me. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Thanks for joining me.